It's time for our first Sunday roundtable debate with our politicians as we take up the issues of the month. Starting with Steve Wilson, Libertarian.
Thank you
very much, Steve, for being with us. And Jim Homily, Republican. Thank you very much, Jim.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure. Jim, you might want to, you know, up your mic. We want to make sure we hear you.
So you'll hear me.
So we won't get this call from this guy down in, what was it, Manassas Park or someplace that called us one time and said, Jim is outnumbered. And also Emily Leffler, who is our independent.
Good morning, Jerry.
And Eric Mickelson, Green Party. Good morning, Eric.
Hello,
how you
Jerry.
Doing, buddy? Fine. Glad to see you.
Good morning.
And ladies and gentlemen, Dana Jones. With our six other Democrats running for office. How many are there?
Nine.
Far too many.
Hi, Mary. We have nine, but good morning, Jerry.
All of them plan to be president. I mean, like people like Al Sharpton. What's the lady's name? Bronner?
Carol Moseley Braun.
Carol Moseley.
Well, that's why Dana's leaving us. She's going to announce her presidential campaign.
Yes, next week I'll be on
George
show.
Bush looks
number 10.
Good.
No. Did you watch the debate last night?
Which debate?
The Democrat.
I guess
easy to miss.
South Carolina. Was,
well,
was great.
I didn't. I didn't because I was out at a wedding. One of our executive producers, in fact, the guy who produces the John Thompson show, my good buddy Chris Johnson and Stephanie got married yesterday, and a lot of folks from Sports Talk. You know, that was a big thing. You know, and he's a great guy, and it was a nice way for me to put that in there. This congratulate Chris and Stephanie, but that's where I was. Be with them than to watch the debate of the Democrats.
Well, they only get married once, so.
Right.
And they'll be replaying this evening.
And the Democrats are going to replay that mess. I mean, they're going to do it again, huh?
They're going to replay it. It was great. Real issues. Healthcare.
God bless C-SPAN.
Telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980 on the Verizon Wireless System. Well, folks, let's get down to business. It's been a pretty busy month. You heard what Eleanor Holmes Norton said about the mayor and the school board over vouchers, school board president over vouchers in the District of Columbia. Do you think vouchers will really hurt the home rule if they come into Washington, if Congress says that or the mayor signs off on vouchers? What about that, Steve?
Well, how you got to question how much home rule the district actually has to have passes judgment on everything they do, but I don't see how giving parents a choice in the education of their children will affect home rule in the district.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the mayor's in favor of it, so I think this is a fine example of home rule. We're going to try to empower the citizens of the District of Columbia and empower the parents to pick best schools for their children.
Dana?
Representative Norton is a wonderful woman. She sure does have a hard job. I tell you what, I seem to agree with her. I'm not real sure how this is going to help our public schools. Taking money away from them, I'm not real sure how that ever helps the situation.
Well, I think it's interesting that the Republican is now in favor of home rule when the mayor decides he wants to do something that's maybe in line with their agenda, but when, you know, they're talking about giving them voting representation in Congress or something like that.
Yeah.
Well, no home rule.
Entirely different issues.
Sure they are, Jim.
Emily, let's hear from the independent.
Well, yeah, I'd have to agree
not
with Eric on
not associated with
this.
Any party.
I'm still outnumbered.
Well, I do have to agree with Eric on this issue. I do believe that equal access to education is important, but, you know, when we have all this rhetoric about bringing democracy to Iraq, but everyone from the president down to some local officials think that the citizens of don't deserve equal representation and democracy here in the U.S., then we need to seriously look at these things.
Okay.
Well, I would flip that on its head. I would say that most of the members of this panel didn't want to bring democracy to Iraq, so I'm shocked they're so concerned about the district.
Our television.
We're talking about rhetoric.
We don't have Saddam Hussein running the District of Columbia. Jim, I have to say that in their behalf.
We don't have oil
it was
in
very,
the District of Columbia.
I'll tell you, a couple of years back, it was very Iraq-like in the District of Columbia. The government was broken. Clearly broken.
With the Republican Congress?
I tell you what, if there was oil in the Anacostia River, we would have invaded D.C. a long time ago.
Our telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980 on the Verizon Wireless System. Dana, there is oil in the Anacostia. I guess they haven't cleaned it up in the top. It's called Anacostia Cleanup Day, you know what I mean? But anyway, moving right along, I just wanted to get your input on that. Folks, please join in on our telephone because this is what we like about our roundtable. We're not like a lot of the Sunday morning talk shows, political talk shows, where everybody's so stiff-shirt with white shirts and ties on. We're very loose here. I mean, we laugh because politics can be funny. Politics can be sad. It affects us all, and it has a lot to do with how we spend our money. All right, what's happening with the Hawks and the Doves? This is a biggie. The Hawks and the Doves, haven't heard that term in about 10 years, actually. But now it's back in the news. The Hawks and the Doves, who's the Hawk? Rumsfeld and the Defense Department. They want to clean up Iraq in a military way. And then there's Colin Powell returning from Syria this morning. We must diplomatically go about the business of dealing with the Middle East. He's been saying this over and over. The United Nations says it. And a lot of people say it, and it seems like it's caused some friction in the White House. What about that, Jim?
I don't think so. I think President Bush knows what he's doing. He's hired a lot of strong people, and he's letting them debate. I think we've got a little bit of a good cop, bad cop situation going here, and I think it serves the president well.
Okay. Emily?
Well, I think that Colin Powell is the only thing that keeps this administration from being a gunslinging monarchy, pretty much. I mean, he's role by going to Syria. He was blasted by Newt Gingrich, of all people, blast from the past, who, you know, for participating in democracy with a country which we have diplomatic relations with. You know, I think anything that keeps us from just running in, you know, head on into an invasion is a good thing.
Go ahead, Eric.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, you know, with all the talk about bringing democracy to Iraq and, you know, recently Donald Rumsfeld saying, well, look, we're not going to have a theocracy. You know, if that's what a democracy would be in Iraq, we're not going to allow that to happen. I mean, so that seems to be a paradox there. We see in the occupied territories where rather than letting the Palestinians elect a representative, the one is appointed for them, which doesn't seem like democracy to me. So I think, you know, again, we've got a lot of good rhetoric here, but ultimately it's about power, and I think those folks in the administration are winning out.
Dana?
Well, I think that, you know, Mr. Powell's doing his job. As Emily said, this is what his role in the government is to be, and I can't believe in a way that we would be, that the administration would be at odds with one another because one member would say, let's bring democracy into this. I mean, the sheer fact that they're going to, you know, ride roughshod over another country. I mean, we're having, it was funny, last night Al Sharpton said, we're going to put in a government in Iraq, but we're barely occupying our own 50 states. You know, we can barely turn the lights on in schools. We can barely do things that we need to do here. People don't have health care. So I think we need to look at this a little bit more.
Okay. Steve?
I mean, it's interesting. You know, you have two different people, Rumsfeld and Powell, given two completely different types of jobs.
Mm-hmm.
They're supposed to offer two different perspectives, points of views. How can we expect them to be able to agree on everything?
So would you say that this is a media thing, that the media is trying to look for headlines to sell headlines, making
sure.
A big fight between Rumsfeld, the Hawk, and the Dove?
I mean, the media is always looking for conflict. Conflict sells newspapers, sells mm-hmm. TV. So they're just looking for things that aren't there.
Right. Telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980 on the Verizon wireless system. Absolutely free call. I have lines open, and you can kick in at any time. If we are talking about apples after we've talked about oranges, that's perfectly okay with us. Just kick on in and give us your opinion, and that's one of the nice things about this country. We have radio shows where you can call and give your own opinion. 301-230-0980, pound 980 on the Verizon wireless system. Someone wanted to say something? Oh, all right. I think we should go to the Democrats right away before we get into anything else, before we get to Ehrlich and his $2 billion deficit. Let's talk about the demos. And I'm going to turn to my dear friend Dana Jones, who's last on this program, who will not appear anymore after today, which means that she could say an awful lot. But anyway, Dana, what's the story? The nine got together last night in a debate. And one of the big things that they're saying about the candidates in the Democratic Party is that all of them sound alike, all of them have the same objective, and that is to attack Bush.
Well, to say that they all sound alike, I don't think is actually accurate. If we want to say they all are saying the same thing, they're all saying that they want to help bring more health care to more people. They want to help the economy. They want to help our schools. Well, you know what? Then I'm proud that maybe some of them are talking the same talk and walking the same walk. However, last night's debate, we saw how different they were. I mean, there are different views on the war amongst the nine. And, again, health care really played a large part, and it was brought in a funny way with the Bush tax cut. It was saying, you know, we have to abandon this. We're already in a deficit. We already can't pay our bills. So many states need help with their homeland security budgets. I mean, Mayor O'Malley in Baltimore is doing everything but paying for public education out of his own checkbook. I mean, he doesn't have a cent to spare. And, Representative Gephardt really, again, talked about his health plan that he brought back about last week and is challenging the rest of the candidates to, you know, let's look at this health care issue, let's look at this problem, and let's put something together. And it was a lively and wonderful debate.
Eric, one of the things we've been seeing, especially in this morning's headlines and television imageries, is the fact that I noticed on NBC this morning, there was a picture of the debate. I mean, you know, a shot of the nine candidates of the debate. And then in the midst of it, there is this quick snapshot of President Bush walking across up to the podium stand on the Lincoln, the SS Lincoln. USS Lincoln, and they're comparing that this man is right now, he's what, 70% popularity?
More than that. Yeah.
More than that. His image, he's a winning president right now. Can the Democrats pull it out?
I think it's going to be difficult. I think that he does have a lot of popularity on, especially his handling of the war issue. I think on domestic issues in the economy, he's considerably weaker for good reason.
Well, you know, he's supporting tax cuts,
Jim,
which are very popular.
Jim, they're not as popular as you would think that they are. They're, you know, about half the population seems to support the tax cuts. And so, anyways, regardless, I think that the Democrats are going to have to present an alternative message. I mean, to some extent, when you say they all sound like they are attacking Bush, that is the one objective that they all have in common, is to unseat George W. Bush. But I think that, you know, they're going to have to present an alternative image. I think with adopting these universal health care plans like Gephardt and Dean have talked about, I think are a good step in the right direction, as well as trying to figure out how we can really improve the economy in a way that doesn't involve ballooning our deficits for future generations.
Yeah, I mean, if the deficits continue to go up, unemployment keeps rising, we will have another one-term Bush presidency.
Exactly.
Because people are going to vote.
Yeah, they're going to vote their own pocketbook. They're going to look out for their own interests, and people don't really care what's going to happen over in Iraq when they're having trouble paying their own bills.
With that kind of staging, Jim Pomeroy, who do you see in the Democratic corners as taking the lead?
Yeah, it's hard to tell with that group. I mean, many of them are very flawed. Gephardt is running on Hillary care, which shouldn't work well for her. Dean is running on thinks Woodstock is just around the corner. This is a rerun from the 60s, 70s, and 80s, but none of the hits of today. So this is a motley crew of nine.
Jim, have you read Gephardt's health care plan? You read it, and have you read Hillary Clinton's?
I'm very familiar with Hillary Clinton's plan. I helped defeat it.
Did you
along
read
with a lot of other
Dick Gephardt's plan? Did you read
Dick
Gephardt's
plan? Yes,
and from front to back.
And
front
to back. Heck, he hasn't read his own plan from front to back.
Let me ask you this: how does it differ? That's what we would want to know. Not whether you read it or not, but how would it differ? How does the Hillary plan
I didn't bring all 10 volumes with me this morning.
But very quickly, Dana, because this is a very important part, a point to Americans right now. We just talked about elderly care earlier on one of the earlier segments here on Metro Talk, how older Americans will be most dependent on health care. So how are these health plans differing?
Well, you know, I'm not going to talk for Dick Gephardt's plan because I'm not with his campaign nor a spokesperson for him. However,
did you read it?
However, the way that they fund this program is completely different than before, and it also helps states. Whereas I think the Hillary plan did not also help state government employees.
Uh-huh.
This picks up 6% of the cost, I believe, for state government employees. So there is a lot of difference.
So the difference is, the main difference you're saying then is one that is much more localized and the other is much more federalized. Okay, Eric?
I have one criticism of the Gephardt plan, and I think that the issue is with regards to the deficits, if we're going to be using that money to offset medical expenses, it's not going to be going to pay down the debt. And so I think the issue is, look, there are alternative plans that are actually much more cost-effective. And I listened to your previous show where the gentleman said that a lot of people are happy with their Medicare mm-hmm. coverage. And one such plan is essentially to extend Medicare to the entire population. So to provide a single-payer health care system is what it's called. And it's considerably more cost-effective than this alternative that Gephardt is proposing. And, you know, it's a way to potentially use that money, not necessarily in tax cuts, but to pay down the deficit as well.
Telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980 in the Verizon wireless system. If you're just joining us, this is the first Sunday roundtable, our political roundtable. Each first Sunday, we invite our guests, our panelists, to come in and to talk on the issues of the most important issues of the month. And certainly we have with us this morning Steve Wilson, who's we are welcoming. Steve is filling in for his colleague, libertarian colleague, Nick Solwak, is out doing his thing, most likely.
We're not exactly sure. We were trying to figure out what her name is.
Tim Pommely, the Republican, is here. We always say the Republican because he takes a good stand. And Emily Leffler, independent, along with Eric Mickelson, Green Party, and Dana Jones, Democrat. Let's talk to Mike and Boy. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, good morning, Jerry. Long time no speak. How you doing?
Oh, fine, my buddy. Thanks for calling.
Thanks. First question. C-SPAN didn't air the debate last night. I was looking for it, and I didn't see it. So I thought it was going to be aired on Road to the White House tonight. Can I get some clarification on when it's coming on?
Actually, that was on local channel 8. It was carried by ABC affiliates, so it was local channel 8 last night.
Oh.
And, Eric, you said it was...
I think tonight it's going to be on C-SPAN at 6:30. Yeah, Road to the White House at 6:30, maybe 9:30. It's going to be rebroadcast a couple times.
Okay, good deal. See, I have satellite TV. I don't have cable. Okay,
cool.
All right, let me chime in on this lovely debate. Number one, first of all, President Bush's numbers are very soft. Be fooled because you take these snapshots of portraits from around the country where these pollsters interview 800, maybe 500 people, and they ask a question in a certain way. Friday, the unemployment numbers came out for the month of April, and it was an alarming 6%. When the American people go to the polls in about 18 months, and they see that their 401 became a 201, it's less than that, okay? And they see that under George Bush right now, we've lost 2.8 million jobs, and compare where we were 3 years ago to where we are today. And let me add this too. It's no done deal that George Bush, you know, I like the picture with him flying onto the USS Lincoln. I wish he'd done that when he was in the reserve, but I'm not.
Well, he was patrolling the skies of Texas then, so.
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to be partisan, though. But, you know, that was a great picture. And
what's the difference between that picture and the picture of Bill Clinton walking down this long hall to go into the convention hall? Remember that, Jim?
Oh, yes.
I mean, that was so staged and so dramatic.
That was a convention. We're talking about the end of the war. These are two different things.
It's still staging. It's still imagery.
Oh, but
one is about
here's the point,
history,
Jerry. Here's the point. Did you miss it? Tim... President Bush and Karl Rove are politicizing the war.
There's
a difference between our men and women who went to war and some who gave their lives and sacrificed and using it for political purposes, and one going in a political event in a national at the Democratic National Convention in Los Angeles, which I was proud to be there.
But okay. All right.
Presidents of both parties use military.
Let me get my friend here to answer.
Presidents of both parties have been accused of using, you know, the ends of successful military engagements as for political reasons. I mean, it's very hard for an incumbent president not to get some credit for a war in which he led us to victory. Nor should he try to not claim credit.
Okay, I'll tell him. Go right ahead.
Clinton doing it with Bosnia conflict. But my last point on this, Bill, and I know you have other callers, and I appreciate your time. The point is this. It's no done deal about look at the results with the war on terror. We still haven't found bin Laden. We're still at threat. They're still at threat at home. In the situation in Iraq, how cost for reconstruction, you know, we haven't found Saddam Hussein. So there still are a lot of open-ended questions with the Bush foreign policy of preemption, the doctrine of preemption.
Okay.
So, Nothing is a done deal.
I don't understand what the question is.
He was calling in on what we were talking about.
Right.
Jim.
He is saying that everything isn't perfect. That in his mind, or in the views of some people, that once we invaded Iraq, everything should have been nothing but daisies.
You guys have been negative
about this for months, and I've been positive, and so far I've been right.
No, you haven't. Where are the weapons of mass destruction? I still haven't heard or seen one of them.
You guys kept denying they were there, so you should be happy we haven't heard them yet.
Okay, now let me finish real quick. First off, I'm so happy that the caller called in. Second off, I found something very interesting. When the war, you know, we found out the war was going to come to an end, Bush was going to make an announcement, there was a sigh of relief in me. There are men and women over there fighting every single day. Now, when the reporter said, you know, how is he going to be doing this? Okay, he's going to be flying in on a jet, landing on an aircraft carrier, and his spokesperson also at the same exact time said, you will be seeing this over and over again in campaign clips. Wait a minute. Why are we meshing these two things together? Yes, of course he's going to run for re-election. That's his right. He's allowed two terms, or to run for two terms. However, why are we meshing campaigning with the end of a war? This is disgusting.
It happens all the time.
But Steve, what's wrong with that?
The American people, you guys are not giving the American people enough credit for being smart enough to realize that they know that this is where this came from. This came from a press conference. This came from a staged event. And he's just trying to get some PR value off of this particular staged event.
But, Emily, don't Democrats do the same thing? I mean, if the Democrats were wearing those shoes, wouldn't they use clips of events during the administration for a campaign purpose?
Yeah, I have to agree with you, Jerry. I mean, as despicable as I find it, politics is politics. And, you know, showmanship is showmanship. And I don't think anybody should be surprised.
I'll telephone number 301-230-0980. Pound 980 in the Verizon Wireless System. I have lines open, my dear friends. Like to get your input, your opinion, and whatever your comments or questions, whatever you think you have on your mind this morning as we talk about the various issues of the month with our political roundtable, our first Sunday debate, and certainly want you to be a part of it, along with Dana Jones, Eric Mickelson, Emily Leffler, Jim Pomeli, and Steve Wilson. Let's talk with, is that Will? Will on his cell phone. Good morning, Will.
Good morning.
Where are you calling from, Will?
Right now, I'm in Springfield, headed to work.
All right. Go right ahead.
Yeah. 3 weeks out of the month, I really enjoy listening to the program. It's always this one time of the month where we have our political opponents battling each other. It's supposed to be one America, one for America. I'm to the point now with them bickering and arguing over their political aspirations that I'm about ready to denounce my American citizenship. It's gotten that bad. We're supposed to be one country. Let's do this as one. Forget Democratic, Republican, Independent. Let's do this once and agree on something and stop with the bickering and arguing over the president, the war, and what have you. Let's talk about America for Americans. Let's get it together. Stop arguing about your political aspirations.
All right. Thank you, Will. You know, Will does raise a question we heard over and over again. What about this unification or this unifying of Americans? And let's get behind the president, let's get behind the White House, let's get behind what these leaders are leading the country to.
Well, I agree with our caller. I think America should all believe in one thing, and they should believe in what I say.
But you know what? Debate is on 301-230-0980, pound 980 on the Verizon Wireless System. And give us a call, folks, because we just love to talk.
Debate is the music of democracy. And if, you know,
let me get a neutral view here. Steve Wilson, the Libertarian.
It almost sounds like we need to bring back the House Un-American Activities Committee to keep Jim happy here.
McCarthy is still alive, isn't he?
I believe so. And you know,
Hitler, Stalin, all of those guys are still living.
They really want to suppress the debate here, don't they?
Actually, we got rid of Stalin and those guys. That was the Cold War. We won.
But everybody had to take their way. You know, go ahead, Emily.
Yeah, I think if anything, everybody on this panel can agree that we all have the right to argue.
Well, Jim doesn't.
I'm outnumbered.
But if I can take a left turn, so to speak, with that conversation. I think that one area where politics and semantics could maybe be put aside for a bit is, as an independent speaking who would not like to see our president in a second term, I think it would be nice if those on the left or, you know, somewhat left of the Republicans could, for example, maybe the Green Party could put aside Ralph Nader's personal aspirations and party growth for a moment to focus on aligning with other groups on the left and the Democrats to support a realistic candidate. And I voted for Nader. I'm all for third-party politics. I'm all for democracy and growing parties. But I think at this moment, unseating President Bush is a more important immediate objective.
And you know, let me explain something. Jim always says this, and we got a couple of letters, and you can always email us here, MetroTalkTalkDC@AOL.com. Well, like one guy said, Jim is outnumbered. But, you know, when you think about it, the dynamics of the panel, you represent what America is. People have different ideologies. But if you have enough money in your pocket, you can buy the media and buy everything else and walk across steamship decks during the election, you know. If you can do that. As Bill Clinton said it, Jim. Bill Clinton said it. They asked why we have so many conservative talk shows on the air, and Bill Clinton said we don't have any money. The Republicans have all the money.
No, it's the market. It's the market speaking, and Americans. Americans. The radio market. Radio stations are not going to air things that don't get ratings, and conservative shows get ratings. It's the free market system. God bless it, and God bless President Bush.
Yes. Okay.
Are you sure you're not running, Jim?
Can I talk to Robert? Oh my goodness, my good buddy Robert in Sterling, Virginia. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning, Jerry. Thanks to be having me on again, and just want to say goodbye to Dana. Dana, it's been good sparring with you these last few years. And,
well, thank you so much for calling in. I actually get a big kick out of that. Thanks for calling in and saying goodbye.
No problem. I just hope that we can get to somebody as far left as you all to replace you.
Emily's here.
But I'm not a Democrat.
I just have a quick comment. Said that George Bush's polls are soft and you can't trust him, and people kind of carp at him for this and that. I just want to make one point that isn't it refreshing that we get to talk about a guy who I think everyone concedes is a genuinely good person. You know, he's in bed every night at 10 o'clock with his own wife. he exercises and he just.
Have you been outside of the bedroom?
He exercises and he goes to bed at 10. I want an IQ test.
Robert, I just have one question.
Yeah.
As a journalist, have you been outside the bedroom of George Bush to see if he's in bed at 10 o'clock every night?
Well, no, I haven't.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I'm sure there's enough Democratic tales that if he was doing anything wrong, we would hear about it by now. So I just wanted to say that it's refreshing.
I don't know, because $8 million came out of Dick Cheney's purse, did it not? One of his companies of restoration in Iraq. We just found that out because of some reporter.
Yeah. Halliburton got the contract to rebuild.
Right. So what's the point there?
There was no bidding. Halliburton got it right away.
Isn't Halliburton one of the best companies at what they do in the world?
I don't know.
And they lost some of the big contracts.
Money, there should be some competition.
There should be bidding. There's bidding in every other government.
They should have to
arena.
Prove themselves, not go on reputation.
Let me point out that the fact that they did not get many of the major contracts shows that Vice President Cheney did not have the influence that, if he'd even, you know, he didn't exercise any influence, but you guys were all saying that Halliburton was going to get all the contracts because Dick Cheney was going to deliver him all these contracts. Well, he didn't.
We didn't say that. And also, just real quick, I was wondering, who was at that energy meeting over 2 years ago that we still don't know that was in the White House that wrote the energy policy?
She still wants to go back in the past.
Robert, go ahead, Robert.
I was going to say, she's asking who was at the meeting. People who were experts on energy policy were there. See, that's another thing.
Who were they?
In our government. We elect these representatives, and they go, and they, you know, the first day on the job, and they go sit on the Energy Commission. All of a sudden, they're supposed to be an expert on energy. When you want to know about energy concerns, you go and you talk to energy companies, people who have been in the business. You don't go talk to Representative Barney Frank or whoever else has...
Sir, I'm not sure.
Hold tight, Dave. I didn't finish.
Okay, go ahead.
I was just going to say, when you want to know about issues, you talk to experts in the field. You don't necessarily go converse with Congress to get your information.
All right, Robert. Thank you very much.
Thank you. See you all later.
Okay. And when Robert brings that up, no one's arguing that you shouldn't talk to energy experts, Robert. But if you look at the rules and how things are supposed to be done, you have to disclose that information. You have to say who was at the meeting. That's all we're asking. Who was at the meeting?
If you're just joining us and wondering about all this clamor on the airways, it's Metro Talk, our first Sunday roundtable debate with our politicians. And I love this because when I go to into a session tonight where we sit around, a bunch of folks get around, and they just talk about the world issues. And they represent, just like you guys, various parties and ideologies. And I think it's so healthy and wholesome, but most importantly, it makes me to be so proud and American that we can sit here and share ideas on the airways. So anyway, in case you're just joining us, we're talking with Eric Mickelson of the Green Party, along with Emily Loeffler, who is independent, Jim Pomeroy, Republican, Dana Jones, Democrat, and Steve Wilson, Libertarian. Steve?
Yes. In terms of, you know, what we're talking about here with Halliburton, I'm just curious, you know, they didn't get these big contracts that you were talking about, but how many of these companies that got the big contracts are going to turn around and subcontract it to Halliburton?
Right.
That would be very interesting to find out. You know, are they going to turn around and hire Halliburton?
Very interesting.
You know, they're just playing middleman.
Come on, and everybody. This is a situation where we're going to rebuild Iraq, and there are only
Why are we doing that?
Because, you know what? Because we went in there and took care of it.
We went in there
and took care of business.
We tore it up.
We got rid of a dictator.
We liberated
that country and liberated a threat to our country.
And then reap the profits.
So when are
there are no profits.
You?
We're paying a lot of money. We're paying a lot of money into this and paying a lot in American lives.
Let me ask a question, please. Thank you very much. You talk about liberating Iraq, and they're in turmoil. What is the liberation?
It's better than it was under Saddam Hussein. And give us a couple of weeks. I mean, first everyone was saying that this war was going to be a quagmire. Then we won it very quickly. And now everyone's saying it's going to be a quagmire.
Okay.
Let's give President Bush a couple of more months
One more point on this, and we have to move on. Eric?
The administration more than a couple of weeks in Afghanistan, and I was wondering, you know, is Afghanistan rebuilt yet, or is it even on the way to being rebuilt?
Nattering nabobs of negativism here on Metro Talk.
Thank you, Mr.
holding you to your...
Excuse me, folks. We got one caller who called up, Quentin Wright, and they gave us C-SPAN. Thank you very much, my dear friend. The Democratic debate, C-SPAN, Sunday night, May 4th, that's tonight, at 1 p.m. this afternoon, 6:30 p.m. this evening, 9:30 p.m., and at 12:30 a.m. tomorrow morning. So they're really going to do it on C-SPAN. I think they're trying to say something. Telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980 in the Verizon Wireless System. We have lines open as we discuss the various issues here with our Democratic panel and our Republican panel. Let me go on and say our political panel.
Freudian slip there.
Our Republican panel, 4-1 here on Metro Talk. And our telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980 on Verizon. With a $2 billion deficit in Maryland, Maryland is it's a unique situation along with the Potomac River shores, because on one side of the Potomac, we have a Democratic governor with a predominantly Republican General Assembly, and on the other side in Maryland, we have just the opposite, a Republican governor and a Democratic General Assembly, and it really, the fireworks have been working. In fact, the fireworks have been exploding so much that last week both got together and said, what are we going to do about the Potomac River Bridge that they've been talking about? Well, anyway, there's a big deficit on both sides of the Potomac. What is happening to Governor Ehrlich in the novice governorship that he's serving? Has he gotten in too deep with promises that he can't keep, such as no tax increases, I want tax cuts? What about that, Jim?
Yeah, I think that Governor Ehrlich is doing a fine job at holding a line on taxes. The Democrats are trying to force him into a tax increase, and he's standing firm and saying no. Whereas across the river in Virginia, Governor Warner vetoed a tax cut that was passed by the Republican General Assembly. I think the battle lines across this country are very clear. Republicans support limited government and tax cuts, and Democrats support expanded government and tax hikes.
But what, I mean, Ehrlich came in and lost one of the big, just like Warner. Governor Warner in Virginia lost a big referendum. And in Maryland, Governor Ehrlich lost a big measure, and that was the slot machines. Now he's falling back into an empty hole of how am I going to pay off this $2 billion debt in Maryland. Not necessarily a political platform, but the fact of reality. He is now forced to raise taxes.
But here's the difference. In Virginia, Governor Warner tried to impose by referendum a tax increase on the citizens of Virginia, and the voters overwhelmingly by a 10-point margin told him no. In Maryland, the people who told Governor Ehrlich no were the General Assembly of Maryland, not the voters of Maryland. The voters of Maryland told him yes and elected him.
Okay, let's go around the panel, and I'm coming to Chad in just a second, and I'll go around the panel. Dana, you want to answer to that?
Yes, I do. You know, in Maryland, the University of Maryland, as far as all the universities and the schools, are screaming and yelling out loud because, you know what? They're not getting funding. They, you know what? Jim is here, folks, pretending to play a violin. You know what? It's serious to me.
I'll tell you why it's serious.
Excuse me. When schools don't have money, that's a serious thing. When universities don't have money to pay their professors, that's a serious thing. And as far as Virginia, and now Virginia wanted to expand because we have such bad problems with traffic. They wanted to have a 74 cents tax hike on helping our roads. Well, you know what? Enjoy traffic.
Okay, Steve?
You know, I find it very interesting that it seems like everybody wants to blame, say this is Governor Ehrlich's $2 billion deficit. It is not Governor Ehrlich's $2 billion deficit. It's the General Assembly and Governor Glenn Denning's deficit. They brought it on themselves by more than doubling the amount of money that the state government has been spending in the past 8 years. The General Assembly brought it on themselves, and I hate to say it, but I agree with Governor Glenn Denning. The General Assembly spent the money. They need to find a way to get out of this problem without putting it on the backs of the Maryland taxpayers.
Hold tight. Ehrlich, then you'll say, inherited this because it was a lot of spending on environmental issues, even educational issues that were in question, and many other issues under Glenn Denning.
I don't think there was a program that Governor Glenn Denning could not find a way to spend money on, and the General Assembly. They all did it.
Eric Mickelson.
You know, I have to agree with Steve, but maybe not exactly the way one would expect. They did bring it on themselves. They gave a huge tax cut over the course of 4 years, and that was approved by Glenn Denning, because I guess they thought that, you know, this was going to win them political points, and it cost them the election in 2002, I think, and it also cost them a lot of additional revenues into the state budget.
Telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980 on Verizon Wireless System, lines open. These are the issues that you're going to hear for another year that we're talking about this morning, because the elections are next year, big elections, presidential elections, as well as a lot of congressional elections next year. So, you know, don't shy away from these issues and say, hey, I didn't hear about it, I didn't know about that. It's what we're doing here is discussing actually what you're going to have to vote on within maybe a couple of months in Alexandria, certainly. Chad in Bowie, good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to comment about the war and President Bush, and I'm so pleased to listen to a program and hear someone stand up.
Would you say that again?
I'm so pleased to hear someone stand up to the Republican media juggernaut that labels anyone who disagrees with their policy as un-American or non-supportive of the troops. Well, there are many, many Americans who just would like to question or have some answers to some of the things that go on with this Bush White House. And we simply get shunned aside, and it's very disheartening, and it's something that every American should be very concerned with when we cannot partake with decisions or have any answers as to what decisions are being made with our government.
Okay, Chad, hold on the line. Don't leave me, okay?
All right.
I want to bring George in Arlington, on the side of the river, on the line with you. George, you heard what Chad said, and I'm taking you've heard what most of the issues have been discussed on the show. Go right ahead.
Well, I love how the Republicans always say they don't want to raise taxes. But isn't it ironic? Allen and Gilmore over here in Virginia had the biggest surpluses in the history of Virginia and did absolutely nothing for bridges, for roads. You know why? They wanted to cut taxes, but yet they wanted all these great educational things, but they won't put their money where their mouth is. And to top that off, Allen's a draft dodger. He had three student deferments. While everybody else is going to Vietnam, just like Bush and Cheney, they got out of it too. Going back to the president guy talking about, you can't question Bush or Cheney because it's war. Well, they ought to go to war. See what it is. You know, right now, if you make over $30,000 a year, you have to have $1,500 worth of expenses before you get an aspirin from the VA. So where's Bush and Cheney? They don't need that.
Okay,
Chad.
And it's fascinating that these individuals, along with our Republican senators, seem to be so positive and so pro-war and so for the troops. And every comment that they make, or any time someone makes a comment in which they may disagree with the whole purpose of our country going to war, they come out and slam them as being un-American or being against the troops. And it makes many people, in my opinion, afraid to just express their own opinions on this. And
absolutely.
Okay.
I'm just very concerned with the way the media is just steamrolling over people who have dissenting opinions on a topic.
Chad and George. Chad and George.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Just like, just like Kennedy, you know, and Fox. Where were they during Vietnam? I'll tell you where they were. Avoiding the draft, just like all Bush's brothers.
Okay, George.
Kennedy. And wait a second. One last thing.
Yes, sir.
8 years going to law school. Where was he?
All right. Thank you very much, George. I appreciate that. Let's turn to Susan on the cell phone. Susan, you have the airways.
Hi. How are you doing?
Pretty good.
I just want to go back to this comment about Maryland colleges not having any money.
Mm-hmm.
Virginia's in the same boat.
Yeah.
Warner cut so many education benefits for these kids. My daughter could not go back to college for the second semester because she didn't get enough financial aid to be able to live on campus.
Right.
I'm a single mom. I couldn't afford to rent her an apartment. She was going to school down at CNU in Newport News. She's had to come back home and enroll in Nova until she can apply at George Mason. Because Warner has cut so many education benefits. They cut her major, and she says so many of her professors are not going to have jobs in the second semester because they cut the courses.
Okay.
Something in defense of both Earl again?
In all fairness, I got to go to Jim.
Okay.
He's been asking.
Let me point out that we are spending more on higher education than we ever have before.
Who?
All of this money, Virginia, Maryland, the federal government. When all of these liberals, when Dana is constantly complaining that we don't spend enough money, there is no amount of money that we could ever spend that would satisfy the tax and spend Democrats. It is a fact that the Virginia budget is higher this year than it's ever been before. The Maryland budget's higher. The problem is it's not increasing at double-digit rates as it was the last couple of years, and that's why they're whining.
Doesn't have a lot to do with the cost of living and everything having to do with it.
No. We don't. It's been a double-digit increases for the last 10 years. These are bloated budgets,
but
and
Eric,
the colleges have a lot of money, and they waste a lot of money. And if we could refocus that money into the classroom, that's where we have to do it. We have to reform education, not continue to throw good money at the
bad. We just had a caller say her daughter couldn't go back to school because.
That's not what she said. That is not what she said. She said that her daughter couldn't go to Christopher Newport, that she had to go to Nova. Those are both fine schools. That
she
is not a crisis.
She didn't go to Christopher Newport because she didn't get the funding.
But she can go to Nova, which is an equivalent school.
Warner,
she can go to Nova. They're both fine schools.
Excuse me, folks.
Warner has cut so many education benefits for these kids, it's pitiful.
Right. Do you believe that your daughter has a constitutional right to have the government pay for her to have an off-campus apartment in Newport News?
She has the right to get enough funding to live on campus.
No, she doesn't. As a matter of fact, she has a to go to Nova right here in Northern Virginia and to go to George Mason.
Every child is entitled to education.
Okay. And she has it.
Excuse me, Jim.
And I can't afford the room and board and the tuition.
All right. Susan, thank you very much.
I think
your point is well taken. Let me turn to Emily.
Well, I think Jim's point would be valid if we lived in a system where all educational institutions were equally funded, but we don't. And I don't think that education should be, you know, you can get the type of education, the profession that you choose if you can afford it. That Trent Lott, as one caller brought up, can get to law school for 8 years because his family can afford it. But our local caller's daughter has to, you know, come back and change her professions because she doesn't have the money to follow her dreams.
All right, let's get Rich in Silver Spring on this. Good morning, Rich.
Good morning. Actually, so far as the education thing that just came up, you know, I went to the University of Maryland. I would have loved to have gone away to campus to a smaller school, but my parents couldn't afford for me to stay on campus or an apartment for myself. And I wasn't crying because I had to go to Maryland. But the reason I was calling was about Chad and this Republican media juggernaut.
Mm-hmm.
Where is that at?
Amen, sir. Amen.
Try cable network news.
We have one channel.
And unfortunately, there's only one network that actually shows the Republican media juggernaut. And believe it or not, they weren't lying like CNN so they could keep reporting the news.
Oh, thank you, sir. Right. Thank you.
MSNBC.
Now, next thing that I was going to get to and the main reason
Rich,
I called.
Rich, you got about 30 seconds.
Okay, the gentleman who called saying that Maryland's problem with the finances isn't Ehrlich's, he's correct. They're from the previous administration.
Right.
Just like our present economy, even though it is slow and it hasn't picked up, I remember when Clinton took over, our beloved Clinton people said he fixed the economy before he even submitted his first budget. And I know my time's almost up. Wasn't Clinton dodging the draft? Have a great day, people.
Thank you very much, Rich. Let's go to Pat in Greenbelt. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning. I just wanted to refute one of the statements that I believe Jim just made, that higher education spending is more than it has ever been. That, quite frankly, is not true. Federal and state support for higher education has been on the decline for the last 20 years, and we are now at a point where many of the large public universities that are Tier 1 research universities are considering becoming private institutions because it doesn't pay to get the state funding.
Okay.
The last thing is that what is it, the slot machine? That's a tax on poor people.
That's
okay,
right.
Thank you very much. Okay, good call, Pat. Thank you very much for agreement. I'll call us. You know, it's balanced. I don't care what you say. It's almost like balanced here, you know. It's just nice to hear people with a opposing points of view, except Jim, who feels that everybody should believe the way he does. Anyway, Steve Wilson, the Libertarian, thank you very much, my dear friend,
glad
for filling
here.
In, along with Emily Leffler. I'll talk to you, Emily, soon.
Thank you, Jerry.
Who is our independent, and she's so modest about everything. And Eric Mickelson, thank you. Always a good job, Green Party. Dana Jones, we're going to miss you an awful lot, sweetheart.
I will miss you, too. Thank you so much.
You don't
much.
Mind me saying sweetheart. See, I'm like that. I call, you know.
No, absolutely not. Thank you so much. This has been a wonderful, wonderful time.
Thank you very much. And we really seriously appreciate the contribution you've made. People you hear on Metro Talk, with the exception of, you know, guests, but regular people that you hear coming every month, they are all volunteers, and we thank you for that. And Jim Pomeroy, my good buddy, I'll talk to you later. Okay?
Thank you.
Got to get out of here, folks. Thanking those who helped to put it together. Steve Solomon, our technical producer, along with Courtney Layden, our administrator. Quentin Jackson, our public affairs assistant, written and produced by yours truly, Jerry Phillips, Metro Talk. It's a big big 100 at Sports Talk 980 public affairs presentation from Clear Channel Radio in Washington, D.C. Till next time. Much peace, much love.